Hello, good to be here again. And I see we're starting right on time here. I'll just jump right in, and I'll probably be talking most of the time, the first 45 minutes or so, and then I will turn it over for some questions if you have them. And I think if you type them in, I will take a look at around the 45-minute point, and we'll see where we go from there. So, all right. Well, this is the third class in this 8-week mini series, and I am going to start by inviting Master Jesus and other ascended masters who are involved in this work to be present and to facilitate our understanding and the awakening of all beings. So thank you all for being here and for listening. Last time I spoke about the ego, the false self, and one of the definitions that I gave for it was that it is a sense of lack. And I talked about that a little bit and how it makes up for the lack through various strategies. And tonight I want to continue to talk about the false self. And I'm going to give it a slightly different definition, although it's really the same thing, or it is a very big part of what maintains the false self and what creates it. And that is that the false self is the rejection of what is. So you could define the false self as rejecting what is. It is the programming we've all been given as human beings that automatically rejects or finds fault with the way things are, with reality. And instead it says things shouldn't be the way they are, or they could be different, or they could have been different, or they might be different. As if the ego has a say in it. And so the false self is created by the sense of I like or don't like this reality. I want it to be a certain way. And I don't like the way it is. One of the characteristics of the ego is it's very good at finding fault. It's very good at finding what is not quite perfect. And as I said last time, there is some survival benefit to this ability to see what's out of place or to see what's at fault. But it brings this perception into every moment. So when you're seeing through the ego's eyes, you are seeing through the eyes of what is not here. The glass is half empty. And what is wrong with life? And what needs fixing? And how can I fix it to make it better for me? So it has all these ideas that it brings to life. All these ideas about life not being good, not being good enough, or about me not being good enough, or other people not being good enough, God not being good enough. You name it, it's not good enough. That is the perception of the ego moment to moment. And it creates a very difficult internal experience when you're believing the thought stream and all of these ideas of not good enough, of lacking, and of resistance towards the present moment. When you're believing that, you're not going to be happy. How can you be happy? So the ego is the producer of unhappiness. And yet it pretends to be able to bring you happiness by then providing you with desires that will fulfill the lack or the rejection of reality. So out of this sense of lack and the sense of not good enough and rejection of what is, come desires. desires for a better moment, for a better experience than the one that you're having right now. The funny thing is that it's impossible to have a better experience than the one you're having right now, because now is the only experience you're having, and it's already behind you. And then there's the next moment, and then that's behind you. So how can you ever fix the now? How can you ever have a better moment? The whole idea of better is a concept made up by the ego. It's always living into the future, and its desires are part of this future creation. I will be happy when. I will be happy when I have this. I'll be happy when this stops happening to me. I will be happy when I feel differently. And yet it's the ego that creates all of the bad feelings. So the mind is full of lies about what will make you happy and what is making you unhappy, because the ego is making you unhappy, and then it pretends that it can make you happy, and it can't. Meanwhile, there is reality. And if you could just drop out of your thought stream for even a moment, you would discover that all is already well and beautiful, amazing, and miraculous. How wonderful it is that we are here now on this planet in this moment. This moment is perfect as it is. There are no problems when you are just here now without the thought of a problem. A problem is a concept that the egoic mind creates. You have no problem if you aren't involved with thought, because in the here and now, all there is the experience of here and now. And the experience is just what it is. Furthermore, it's constantly changing into something else, something new, something fresh, something new to be curious about, something new to wonder about. This unknown present moment is exciting simply because it's unknown. What's going to unfold next? We really don't know. And if you stay in this now long enough, you'll experience that unknownness as delicious. It's exciting. It's fun to not know. We love to not know. That's what we love about stories. We love to not know the ending. And we never know the ending of this life, of this next moment. We never know where it's going. How fun. When you're in touch with your true self, that's how it feels. But it's so different when you are involved in your thoughts. Nothing is fun. The ego and the egoic mind, your thoughts, are the spoiler. And when you begin to take a good look at your thoughts and see what it's up to, it's shocking what a complainer it is, what a negative Nelly it is, how the glass is always half empty, how people are never good enough. Nothing is ever good enough. The mind is relentless in its version of reality being not good enough. And so the reason it rejects reality, the here and now, if you don't mind me anthropomorphizing the ego a bit. The ego doesn't want you to be here now, because what happens is the whole sense of yourself, the false self, disappears. Because the false self doesn't exist anyway. It's only a sense of yourself as being separate, of being lacking, of not liking the here and now. The false self is an imagination. It's just thoughts about I. When you drop out of thoughts about I and just land in this present moment, there's no I. There's no I here to complain. There's no I here to have problems. There's no I here to be lacking or unhappy. There's just peace and calm and love and gratitude. Those are the qualities of your true nature. And there's wisdom. There isn't wisdom in the thought stream. There is no gratitude in the thought stream. So gratitude is such an excellent practice because it's exactly what the ego doesn't do. Gratitude is the antidote for the ego's perception that nothing is right, that something is lacking. Gratitude is saying, look what's here. I'm grateful for what's here. Gratitude is the glass is half full, and I'm so very lucky for that. So a very simple means of moving out of the egoic mind and the false self and into the present moment is to find something to be grateful for, to switch that perception to gratitude, from lack to gratitude. So the ego does not want you to drop into the present moment because it disappears. Not the ego that helps you function, that doesn't disappear, but the sense of self, of being a separate suffering me, that disappears. What a relief. Unfortunately, the programming is so strong that unless we've done a lot of spiritual practice, it pulls us right back out of the here and now into the identification with the egoic mind. So most people don't touch into the here and now for very long, even though it feels so good. They'd like to be there, but our programming is such that it's difficult to remain there unless you've done a lot of spiritual practice. And so most people are stuck with the suffering mind and with the ego's perception and with the ego's solution to the problem. It creates the problems it creates. And the solution is to desire certain things. So desires are the ego's strategy for getting a better moment, for getting a better life, for getting a better me. And these desires show up in the thought stream as, I want to lose weight. I want a new car. I want a relationship. I want to be prettier. Every sentence that is I want is most likely from the ego. And it's the ego's solution, not your wisest self, not your true self. It's the ego's solution to feeling bad. If it would just drop into the moment, it would feel the subtle happiness of presence, and it wouldn't be looking for something to make it feel good. But because most of us are stuck in the ego's perceptions, we're also stuck in all of the desire that the ego has for better things, for more things, for self-improvement. Not that there's anything wrong with improving the me, but it's good to also recognize that you aren't actually the me. And there's a certain point in your evolution, in our evolution, when we are done improving the me, trying to improve the me and make it more perfect or more acceptable to others, and we're ready to just move beyond it, to see that we are not that suffering, limited, lacking self that needs improvement. That self is never going to be improved enough for your ego to be happy. That's the sad thing, is all this desiring and going after what we want doesn't actually ever overcome the ego's perceptions of lack and the resulting unhappiness. So it's a scam. The ego makes you unhappy. It creates desires that drive you towards doing certain things and getting certain things, so that one day in the future you will be happy. It promises happiness always in the future, because it keeps you from happiness in the present moment. All it can do is promise, but the future never comes. And even if you get what the ego is desiring, and we all do, we work hard and we lose that weight, or we make enough money to get that dream house, or we manage to get a wonderful relationship, and then reality strikes. Reality is duality. And that Prince Charming that we thought we married eats with his mouth open, you know, or does all sorts of other things that might not be so attractive. And that car, that special car, or that dream home, it breaks down, it gets old, and maybe we didn't really want that model or that exact house after all. So the mind is very quick to become dissatisfied with anything that you do gain. So you gain your desires, and then it wants something else or more of whatever you just got. There's no end to desiring. And if you really look at that, you see that desire is suffering. Desire promises an end to suffering, but it is suffering. See, this illusion that's created by thought, by the false self, it's very tricky. It tells you the opposite of what's true. It lies. There are so many lies when you begin to look very closely. And that's what we're up to in this course. We're going to look closely at a lot of these lies, because once you see a lie, you can't be fooled by it anymore, or not as easily, or not as often. And eventually the whole illusion just breaks down and it can't be held together. So it's a scam. The perceptions of the ego and its strategies for happiness do the opposite. They make you unhappy. How is it that we don't see this sooner? When I first saw this, I thought, how is it I could have missed this? It's such a tricky illusion. It's so believable, and yet when you begin to look straight on, look at the ego straight in the eyes, straight in the face, and see what it really is about, then it becomes obvious. It's obvious what lies it's putting forth. And still, even when we've seen the lies, every moment, we still have to be vigilant and be noticing the lies that are spewing forth from the mind continually. So just because we are on to the mind and we learn about the thought stream and this illusory reality that's created by it, doesn't mean it goes away. So we have to keep noticing in each new moment what the mind is up to, and keep questioning and keep bringing that curious inquiry to the mind, which eventually breaks the illusion down. It's really an upside-down world. What the ego says is true is false. And what the ego says is false, like, for instance, that the here and now is nothing, it's not interesting, it's boring, there's no reason to pay attention to it. What the ego says is false is true. So the ego says the true self is false. The ego says you can't trust being in the present moment. Those two statements are completely false. They are the opposite of reality, the complete opposite. They're not even close to being true. That's the funny thing. The illusory reality is the opposite of the truth. It's really good news because it means that there is another possibility besides suffering and waiting for the future to be happy and going after desires and never being happy, never being fulfilled, always feeling lacking and always feeling not good enough and always feeling dissatisfied with this moment. This is really good news that that isn't how life actually has to be. In fact, we've just been programmed to suffer, programmed to misperceive life. Hallelujah. It's just our programming. And the truth about life is really, really good news. The truth is that you can be happy here and now. It is our birthright to be happy. And we're meant to discover how to be happy in this life. That's what it's all about. That's what waking up is all about. At a certain point in our evolution, we're meant to wake up out of the lies, out of the illusion, and see the truth, discover the truth. And then when we do, we of course want to share it with other people. We want to tap them on the shoulder and say, hello, wake up, wake up. Really, it's good. All is well. Life is good. Life is trustworthy. We can't help ourselves when we find the truth. So a big part of waking up is recognizing the lies that are being told to you by your programming, by your thoughts, by your desires. So that is a big part of what this course is about, is just discovering what the thought stream is saying and how it is not accurately representing reality. In fact, it's doing everything it can to take you away from reality because it doesn't want you to experience the truth, because then it is no longer in power. So I don't like to really make the ego the bad guy and, you know, turn it into a thing by talking in that way. And yet it seems like it may be helpful to use language like that to anthropomorphize the ego in that way, because it is the destroyer of happiness. It is the preventer of happiness. And you might as well see that. And the language helps you to see that. Most of our language obscures the truth. And a really good example of that is all of the coulds and shoulds in the thought stream. We take for granted these words like could and should. And we think, oh yeah, that's the truth. It could be different. It could have been different. And I should be able to have this or that. And he should behave this way. And they shouldn't do that. Those thoughts seem so true. And everyone else is believing such thoughts too. Every single could and should thought in your mind is a lie. And I need to attach a little exception to that. If you're using the word could to talk about the future, yes, it's useful. Anything could happen, theoretically. So the coulds that are a lie are, it could have been different. When you're referring to the past, no, it couldn't have been different. Could is a lie. Should is a lie. When you see those words in your thought stream, know that. It's a red flag. Ah, that's a lie. Every time you believe could or should, it could have been different or it should be different, you're going to suffer. Because life can't be any way other than the way it is right now. And it couldn't have been any way other than it was. So the ego would like to think that it's in control of life. And that's another one of its characteristics, trying to control life. And giving you the impression that you can control life and make things turn out the way you want them to turn out, the way the ego wants them to turn out. But good luck with that, right? There hasn't been anyone on the planet who's ever managed to get their life to turn out the way they wanted it to. So part of seeing the truth about the thought stream is just really taking a good look at what is true. Now, that doesn't mean that some of your desires don't come true. Of course, they do. But they never come true exactly like you think they will. You don't have a crystal ball. The ego doesn't have a crystal ball. It can't predict the future. It can't control the future. There's so many factors that have gone, that go into creating the future and that went into creating the past that we aren't in control of. And that's why one of the major antidotes to suffering and to the illusory perceptions of the ego is acceptance. So I mentioned gratitude as an antidote, and acceptance is another antidote that spiritual traditions have talked about. All spiritual traditions probably have suggested acceptance as the antidote to suffering. They've talked about surrender, acceptance. What is the accepting about? What are you accepting? You are accepting the way life is. You are accepting reality. You are accepting that you don't get what you want all the time. That you don't have the control that you wish you, that your ego wishes you would have. You accept the way things are just here and now. And you don't have to accept everything that happened throughout time or everything that will happen in the future. That would be a lot of acceptance. Sometimes people think acceptance means accepting everything in the universe that's ever happened throughout time. Well, let's just make it a little easier and just try to accept what's happening here and now, because that is reality. Reality is what's happening here and now, not what happened in the past, not what might happen in the future. Those don't exist. Past and future are made-up ideas. All you have to accept is what is going on here and now in this very moment. How hard is that really? Is it really that hard? If you don't bring your thoughts into this moment, it's not at all hard to accept this moment. Most people's moments are pretty ordinary. Most people don't have moments that are dramatic and crisis-laden and excruciatingly painful in one way or the other. Most moments are not like that. If you really look at life, most of our lives are incredibly blessed with ease and ordinariness and not a lot of trouble and not a lot of pain. The pain and the trouble comes from our thoughts about me, myself, and I and our life. The pain comes from thoughts, from resisting this moment or thinking that it should be different, wanting it to be different, from our desire for this moment to be different than it is, for me to be different than it is, for someone else to be different than he or she is. That is the illusory reality. The idea, I want to be different. The idea, he should be different. The ideas cause us suffering. Ideas, they aren't reality. And even if somebody is being rude to you in a particular moment, that doesn't even have to cause you suffering. It depends on what you say to yourself about that rudeness. If you say, that's just his ego, and don't take it personally, there's no suffering. If you say, how dare that person be rude to me? He shouldn't do that. He's so wrong. Or if you say, you're right, I'm just a terrible person, and I'm so ashamed of myself, and he's right, and nobody loves me, then you've created suffering. But someone being rude to you does not have to cause you to suffer. It's what you say to yourself about their so-called rudeness. So this is the secret to happiness, isn't it? The secret is that what you say to yourself about your present moment experience is going to make you happy or not. So it's the definition you give to things, your mind gives to things, that makes you happy or not. If you let your egoic mind define things for you, you're going to be unhappy because it's very negative. It's always going to want to make you wrong or the other person wrong. It's going to spin an unhappy story. So you can learn to counteract that with a happy story, with a happy definition. That's called reframing, and that's very helpful. So happiness is an inside job, as they say. It's what you do internally. And if you can remain in the present moment without those definitions, without the mind's judgments, criticisms, stories, spins on reality, then you're just here in a simple moment. And this moment is always very simple. As I said before, it's primarily a sensory experience. So this ego, it grasps, I'm having a hard time with certain words tonight. It grasps and it pushes away. That is its nature. That is its job, you could say. That's its job description. Desire what isn't here and push away what is here. There just couldn't be a better recipe for suffering than that. So fortunately, and the antidote to this, besides acceptance and gratitude, the antidote is to just notice that this is what the mind does. Just notice it. Notice this crazy grasping and this crazy pushing away, this constant desiring and this constant complaining that the mind does. It's relentless. You don't have to fix it. You don't have to change the thought stream. This is really good news, because that would be really hard to do, because that's another thing you're not in control of, is the thoughts that come through your mind. Your programming is just there. It is going on like a radio station in the background, and you can't do a lot about that except notice it. As soon as you notice it, you are outside of it. You're not caught up in believing it. So you notice what the mind is up to. You notice the complaints. You notice the desire. And have compassion for those complaints. They're perfectly human. Every human being has them. Have compassion for your humanity. Have compassion for your desires and the suffering that they cause. Every human being has them. You're not being personally persecuted. The thought stream is what it is. You don't have to change it. When you learn to detach from it and notice it, it loses strength. It becomes weaker. The ego becomes less convincing. Your desires become less compelling. Your resistances and complaints become less. Because whatever we feed with our attention grows. So if you begin to withdraw your attention from your desires, if you're not focusing on them, believing that you need those to be happy, and if you withdraw your attention from your complaints and not thinking that you need to have those things eradicated from your life in order to be happy, then you actually will be happy. So noticing the thought stream is the fix. The thought stream doesn't have to change. You just have to change your relationship to the thought stream. You have to step outside of it. Take a look at it. See the truth about it. And then just say, okay. Okay, you can be here. There's room for you to be here. Meanwhile, I'm going to stay here in the present moment in reality, which is benevolent, which is kind. And in this reality, I feel gratitude for whatever simple experience or whatever complicated experience I'm having. It's all good. It's all good because it's all for our growth. Of course, the ego doesn't want to grow. It just wants what it wants. If the ego wanted to grow, life would be a lot easier. But it isn't the ego that wants to grow. It is our true self that just naturally is growing and evolving. And when you say yes to the here and now and yes to the present moment, you can begin to learn what you're meant to learn from the present moment and gain the wisdom and gain the strength and the courage to deal with whatever it is you need to deal with. The present moment has all of the answers to any so-called problem you might have. It has all the wisdom, all the strength, all the courage you need to deal with any so-called problems, any difficulties, any challenges, which are part of life. But the challenges are good. They're meant to be part of life. Life is supposed to have challenges. The ego argues with that. No, life should be easy. I shouldn't be having problems. Everyone else could have problems, but I shouldn't be having problems. No, life is supposed to have challenges built into it. That's the grist for a mill. So we grow. So we evolve. What are we evolving towards? What are we growing towards? What is this growth and evolution all about? It's all about love. It's all about returning home to the love that we are at our core. Moving away from the fear and the lack and the hatred and the selfishness and the limitation that the false self is, that the false self creates. Moving away from that into the love, peace, gratitude, and subtle happiness of our true nature. Everything we've ever wanted is here, present, in the here and now, in this simple moment, which is too simple for the mind. The mind doesn't want it. It doesn't want anything to do with this simplicity. It's bored with it. It doesn't like it. Well, when we're tired enough of our suffering, we finally are ready to turn to something else. And when we're ready, it's here waiting for us. It's always been here. Life is that benevolent that it has always been here. All of the happiness, all of the courage, all of the wisdom, all of the patience, all of the inner fortitude and strength you've ever needed to live this challenging life is here for you. It is you. Life is good. Any challenge can be faced and overcome and learned from this place. But if you approach challenges and difficulties from the egoic mind, it's going to be a lot harder to learn from them, to grow from them, to come out a better person. The fruits of listening to the egoic mind when you're involved in challenges are bitterness, resentment, anger, jealousy, hatred, revenge. That's its answer to challenges and difficulties. That's what you get when you listen to your mind. Those are terrible coping mechanisms. Those will put you in a space that will make it impossible to cope well with any difficulty you're experiencing and to move on into some new experience. The ego is always clinging to the past and causing suffering that way. In your own deep wisdom, it's really easy to see that. It's easy to see how crazy it is to cling to the past and how wise it is to forgive so that you can move on, so that you can go forward, fresh, new, without the baggage of the past. In this present moment, there's no past, there's no future. There's just this. So how hard can it be to cope with just this? No matter how difficult the situation is, if it's just this moment to deal with, how hard is that? Reality is not that hard. Your mind makes it hard. And as I said, that is the great, great good news. The mind is making life hard, terrible, horrible, scary, limited. The thoughts about life, about yourself, about other people, about God are creating all of your suffering. It is possible to be in this life without that suffering. And that's why you're here. That's why you're listening to this. That's why you come to these teachings, because you're ready to hear this. And that's more proof of the benevolence of life. It brought you here. So we do our part in growing. We accept and we do our best to grow. And life comes forward with grace, with opportunities, with blessings, with help, with teachings. It rushes forward and showers us with help to assist us once we show that we're ready. That's how gracious it is, how benevolent it is. The forces of the universe are conspiring to bring you back home to love. And all, they're just waiting. They're just waiting for you to say, yes, I'm ready to go home now. I've had enough of this suffering. Enough already. Show me the way home. And there have always been teachings like this. Always been masters walking on the planet. Always been people providing the way out of suffering. Something higher has its hand in life. Some unimaginable intelligence is pulling the strings here. And it really helps to understand that, to know that, to trust that, because your mind does not trust that. Your mind will tell you the opposite. It will tell you you're separate, you're alone. Life is untrustworthy. Don't listen to it. The truth will set you at peace. The truth will bring you into love. The ego's truth will not do that. It will do the opposite. And that's how you know the difference. Okay. I'm going to stop here and take a look at the board and see if there are any questions here that I can address or anything else that might be said on this subject. Okay. Here's a comment. Funny how entertained we can be with the mind's miserable chatter. It is funny. It is really funny. We are entertained. I guess you would say we're entertained because we're programmed to be entertained by it. But it's sort of like a horror movie. If you're entertained as long as you're distant enough from that chatter, you're entertained by the horror movie as long as you can keep your distance enough. But when you start believing the horror, you're not entertained anymore. You're suffering. So it's a slippery slope, isn't it? Quite a slippery slope. And we get tired of the chatter, too, at a certain point. Yes, it's entertaining to some extent. But after you see how many lies are contained in it, it stops being as entertaining. Well, or you could say that when you see the lies, it's entertaining. But if you're spending your time being entertained by the lies, guess what? You're not in the present moment. So, you know, there is a point where when we, Sorry, I lost my train of thought with all of these little sentences running by in the feed. It is quite distracting. Entertaining myself. I'm enjoying my stories. I'm entertaining myself. Is that true? How much do you really enjoy your stories? How true is it that you are entertained? And what I was going to say is that we can spend too much time looking at our thoughts. So as much as noticing is the key to detaching from the thought stream, if that's all we're doing is noticing our thoughts, we aren't going to be fully present in the moment. If we're just present to thought, it isn't all that different from being identified with thought. You're still involved with thought. You're caught kind of halfway in between thought and the present moment. You're not really fully with 2 feet in the present moment. So I think it's a stage where we observe our thoughts, and that's really important to learn how to do that. But at a certain point, you have to turn your attention to the here and now, to the sensory and bodily experience that you're having in the here and now. And just notice thought and then turn your attention away from thought into the here and now. And you have to learn to fall in love with the here and now. So I think that we can still be noticing thoughts and still be in love with them in a sense. In love with noticing them. Maybe that's what's being spoken about when someone says that they're being entertained by their thoughts or they're enjoying their stories. So I think there's just another step where we have to learn to enjoy the present moment and the subtle experience of our true self that exists in the present moment. It's more subtle than thought. Our thoughts are not very subtle. And the present moment is full of energetic intuitions, energetic sensations, intuitions, urges, drives, things that come from your deepest self that are very subtle, that are important to pay attention to, that take some cultivation in learning to pay attention to them. So, yes, by all means, notice your thoughts, look at your thoughts, examine them, bring curiosity to the thoughts, bring inquiry to the thoughts. But ultimately, you also have to turn away from those thoughts and get very, very interested and curious in the here and now, in your experience of what's really going on here and now in your body and your senses and on more subtle levels. And when you do, you'll eventually fall in love with the here and now and with presence. And this process can take a while. I remember I was for a while caught in between, it seemed, where I recognized very clearly that I wasn't my thoughts anymore, but I didn't really have so much interest in being fully present. So if you're in that place, you're in an in-between place, and that in-between place is rather dry. I experienced that in-between place for years, actually, after I had an awakening. I was in that in-between place for a few years before the here and now presence became juicy enough that it began to open and flower and fulfill me on a deeper level. And then I really, really lost interest in my thoughts. So there was a process of realizing I wasn't my thoughts and not being very involved with them, but still having them be quite prominent. And it took a long time before those thoughts fell way, way in the background and before presence became very strongly in the foreground. And that is a much richer, different place than just noticing thoughts. So I'm not sure we can hurry that process. It probably takes time, as it did with me, to evolve in that way. And maybe different people evolve differently, but that was my experience. And I think it could be a very common experience that there is a deepening that happens over years, possibly over decades, where that thought stream goes farther, 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 farther in the background. The most momentous time is when you realize you aren't your thought stream, but then it's still there. And the process then is that it goes farther and farther in the background. It gets quieter, quieter, quieter as presence becomes stronger, stronger, and more in the foreground. And it becomes richer and deeper and more juicy and more alive. And you completely lose interest in those thoughts because they are so empty of anything for you. They have nothing for you. It becomes so apparent, so crystal clear that your thoughts have nothing for you. They serve no purpose, and that they take you away from a beautiful, beautiful experience of presence. And so I think maybe this is a good stopping point. We're about at the end here. And so I will bid you adieu, and we will talk again next week. And I thank you so much for being here. I'm going to turn the mic over now.